You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Melissa Hall. Actually, I should say our guest on this episode is Melissa Hall. Melissa, it's good to have you here this morning.
Yeah, it's nice to be here. I'm excited.
So the way the show starts is, who are you? What do people, and you're running for office, and this is part of interviewing all the candidates for office. So what do people need to know about you to have a balanced picture of who you are as a person, as a human being?
Talking about myself is very difficult. It's kind of funny. Makes it interesting that I'm running for office, right?
Uh-huh. But also some politicians try very hard not to talk about themselves.
So I grew up in Ithaca. I think a lot of what makes me who I am are my relationships, my family, how I was shaped based on my upbringing. I got married and I went to Philadelphia and immediately started working with the homeless population, various homeless populations when I got there. And that shaped me significantly. Coming from Ithaca, mm-hmm, it was a huge change. So even from me moving, I got married in 2005, moved to Philadelphia, started living in Center City, uh-huh. Started taking the transit system and commuting to work directly to one of the shelter that I got a job at. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we can backtrack a little bit. My family upbringing, I grew.
And we'll get to that in a couple of the next questions.
Yeah.
But how does working with the homeless, I mean, you've lived in a very large city and also a very small city.
Yeah.
So how is that shaped to, how does that contribute to who you are? What is that telling us about who you are?
So, Ithaca is a very unique place. Coming from Ithaca, mm-hmm. you almost don't realize how special it is until you leave and then you come back or you visit.
Right.
The values here, the people, politically, I think in comparison to a lot of places, people really care about social inequality here, mm-hmm. Social justice,
right.
Environmentalism, and many of those issues, I think, are seen and heard more here than, at least when I was growing up, I was exposed to a lot of that more so.
Right.
My parents were very conservative, mm-hmm. But I grew up, thinking more liberally and open-minded. I think a lot of it had to do with the community that I grew up in. Mm-hmm. And, all the people, the professors had a lot of kids in school that I went to school with, who I was friends with growing up. Many different factors. And then also coming from a background that my parents, I didn't come from privilege. My mm-hmm. parents, they were both hardworking parents. Both came from farming families. I definitely saw that difference when I was growing up here in Ithaca. My upbringing compared to other people's.
Right.
Yeah.
And did you go to the Ithaca City School District schools or?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you had, so were your parents working class or professional or I come from rural backgrounds and I kind of have a mix of working class and professional things that I do for a living.
Yeah.
Cause I kind of live
so,
in both worlds.
So working class, he worked in several labor jobs, actually mm-hmm. worked for the gun factory,
uh-huh.
Morris Chain, Cornell, and my mom did, office jobs, like computer type mm-hmm. jobs. Mm-hmm. At Ithaca College was her last job that she worked at. Both of them are great opportunities for me to, have access to college education.
Right. And what have you, as you look back on the experience in growing up with kind of, you said parents are conservative and you're growing up in a more liberal environment. How did you learn to live in both spaces? Or do you take away, has that shaped who you are, I guess is a better question.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's definitely shaped who I am. Having, So you have to repeat that.
how is living in both the kind of the more conservative working class environment of your parents and the rural roots of your parents, and that growing up in Ithaca in a much more liberal environment, how have both of those things shaped you? What have they both contributed to you?
There was so much contrast between my family life and, you know, my friends' life. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that a lot of kids experience that growing up around here. So my parents were very strict, you know, about most things. I mean, you know, we were very, we had a lot of freedom when we were growing up. But as I got older, my mom was very, both my parents were very structured with rules and, you know, things that were expectations, making sure that we didn't give up on things that we were committing to. But I mean, those are, you know, those are basic values and not necessarily restricted to being conservative, but, I had other friends that were very, you know, like hippie friends and parents that were like a little bit more hippie and like, you know, just would take me out into different, environments and expose me to different things that I wouldn't have normally been exposed to when with
and
my
you're
parents.
Talking about the difference between being liberal, which is slightly more open, and lax. I mean, liberals and conservatives can both be very clear about what their expectations are of their kids, but they're not necessarily lax.
Yeah.
Some conservatives and some liberals can be just lax, and that's not really helpful for kids in terms of knowing how they're growing up.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess like politically though, me and my father would always, you know, we would not agree on politics and things like that, but it probably had a lot to do with our differences in age. My dad had me when he's 49, which is a huge difference between most parents.
Right. And your mom, was she older or
13 younger? Years younger than my dad. Yeah, so 35.
Right.
Which is still a little bit older than the average parent back then. Yeah.
Right. And from those roots, from those rural roots, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Neat. Yeah. So you brought some music with you. What would you like to start with?
California Stars?
Sure. We got it right here.
Yeah.
I like to rest a heavy head. Yeah.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour is Melissa Hall. So, Melissa, the next question we have is, how have you changed? I'm getting things out of order here.
Yeah.
Looking back on your life, what experiences have most defined or shaped the life that you value living today? What have you learned that really helped you to kind of be clear about how you live and maybe even why you're in this race?
Okay. I think a huge theme in my life has been basically seeing socioeconomic inequality, mm-hmm. Whether it be when I was as a child and growing up in a poor area of Ithaca. I grew up in Enfield School District. So in a lot of times I was, you know, I attended, right, you know, I had childcare options because that weren't the best because it was just what my parents could afford.
Sure.
And so, you know, and helping other people that were poor basically support their families by paying them to take care of me after school.
Right, right.
So, you know, that's definitely a base. And then I think my father was just one of the kindest people. He just, as far as in the community and to neighbors, he would always be willing to help people mm-hmm. and say hello to them, waving at them. A lot of people knew him just as someone who's driving by, who was always right. acknowledging or stopping by to mm-hmm. say hello. And, you know, I was a psychology major. So that was a big thing of I always think about what's going on with mm-hmm. people in their minds and how they are. Where they are, and just being very empathetic and understanding as to kind of helping them or connecting with them. My first, you know, my work in Philadelphia, I think mm-hmm. extremely shaped me. I'm coming from a mostly, you know, it's a small town, rural area, but mostly white when I was growing up here.
Right, right. And it's still 80% white.
It's very, yeah.
Yeah. For the county.
Not very diverse.
Right.
And moving from Ithaca to Philadelphia, where, you know, the majority of the population is Black, mm-hmm. I would say, and especially working in the shelter systems, I would say it's probably 95% Black, mm-hmm. Whether it be fellow employees that I was working with or the people that were actually in the shelter trying to get services or, you know, housing. And really just seeing the grit of poverty, what happens in urban America mm-hmm. With people that are so poor and underprivileged, it really struck a point in my heart, I feel like, just kind of seeing what people go through. When I moved there, my first social work job was working in a welfare to work program. Mm-hmm. It was also connected to a women's shelter for single moms. And that was right after, I think, Bill Clinton passed the work restriction on parents. It's TANF. People would get timed out a certain amount of time.
Right. This was in 2005 or?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
So it was under Bush. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Was it Bush?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, they started restrictions under Clinton, but they kept, they've tinkered with them since.
Yeah, I just remember someone telling me, you know, that naming that administration as
the ones that initiated
it.
That's right. That was, that was a welfare reform piece of the mid 90s.
Yeah. So, and so kind of seeing that firsthand mm-hmm. as to, knowing that so many people were not work ready,
right.
Did not have the supports with children, adequate housing mm-hmm. to support them. And just, you know, you see a lot of the government policies in a different aspect. And I don't think a lot of people see when you do social work or other service type jobs with the poor.
Right. You see how they're ready or they're not ready. And and in many instances, part of this is just people don't have the relationships to know how to move forward. And some of it's training, but some of it's just having social capital, having people who know mm-hmm. how to do stuff in your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's why, you know, having, you know, supportive family makes such a difference to so many people's lives, with how productive and they are.
So how what do you take away from that awareness of just how you said the grit, and I also heard grind of poverty in what you were saying, but there's also grit in the terms of just the sheer stamina that it takes for people to continue to survive and to try to thrive, or at least get by, you know, one day to the next. What did you learn about yourself, or what did you learn about them in that setting?
Yeah, it's almost you know, as a social worker working in the homeless, the majority of my time that I spent working with the homeless was in the men's intake shelter in Philadelphia, the largest shelter, especially during Winter Initiative in Philly. So, you know, it was a combination of my grit probably with sticking it out.
Right.
And, you know, making this job work in the beginning. A lot of it had to do with my camaraderie with my peers and kind of a shared experience of, you know, what it's like to help people and be there to, you know, kind of get people to a better place. And, you know, witnessing some of the clients firsthand right before I started the job, I knew a client that was living outside the cafe that I was working at in between jobs. And my first day going to the shelter, he's coming in for Winter Initiative because people had asked him to come off the streets when it was so cold outside. And that was a very surreal experience. I share that sometimes with other people. But yeah, I mean, just you develop. Yeah.
What was how was that a surreal experience?
Well, it's just like we're going in the same direction, you know, like we ended up in the same place, both of us. And I was kind of reaching out to him when he was on the streets because I had some experience working with the homeless, just to be friendly and say, how are you this morning?
Acknowledging him as a human being. Yeah.
Yeah. Ask him how he was. Sure. And so I was the friendly girl at the cafe, and many people might have been ignoring him. It's, you know, it's upsetting how, you know, so often people do go unrecognized as to what's going on with them.
Right. And did he acknowledge that you had known him before, or did
he did a little bit. Right. Yeah, it was kind of, a lot of people don't want to go into a shelter.
Right. No, you know? No. Who wants to?
Yeah.
So I mean, desperately you want to. Yeah.
He wasn't, you know, a lot of people aren't given the choice. You know, sometimes it's when it's code blue or cold outside, police bring them in.
Right.
Without either that, or they get arrested.
Right.
Depending on what the laws are.
Shelter and jail. Yeah, yeah.
Depending on what the laws are at any given time. But
right. How would you say that these experiences help prepare you for running for office and being a leader?
Well, I could give some examples as to feeling like the policies of the shelter system didn't properly help people. There's something called home first,
right.
You know, providing housing for people first before, you know, having other expectations for them, such as, you know, getting off drugs or, you know, attending mental health therapy or attending a work program. A lot of the time, you know, these things are expected of people while they're homeless and going through a crisis.
Right. And they can't really benefit from them.
Yeah. I mean, they're more likely to be unstable mentally. They're more likely to be using drugs, whether it even be just to cope with their circumstance. So, I mean, that's just one example, but also my personal experience of housing in Ithaca, and then also moving to Ithaca and working with the homeless people here, and seeing what's available to them here, through homeless, crisis intervention or, homeless services and intervention, like trying to, you know, prevent people from being homeless. And, you know, it's very limited. There aren't a lot of low income housing for people that are at the lowest, income level.
No.
There's not a lot of housing for people at my moderate income level.
Right.
And it's very competitive. And it's very hard to find people that have Section 8 vouchers, connect them with housing.
Right. Locally. Very hard to find people who will take the vouchers at this point.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, there's many issues, and everybody wants to live downtown. And for a good reason. Transportation isn't the best. Mm-hmm. And people want access to all the amenities or medical services and basic needs that being in a local or, you know, a central location has to offer.
Right.
So
I'm going to say, is there a piece of music you'd like to play with this particular segment? Or should we go on to the next question?
We can go to Mr. Wendell.
Okay. So we're going to play Mr. Wendell, Arrested Development, and Mr. Wendell. Okay, here we go.
Here, have a dollar. In fact, no, brother man, here, have two. $2 means a snack for me, but it means a big deal to you. Be strong, serve God only. Know that if you do, beautiful heaven awaits. Asked to pull my rope for the first time. I saw a man with no clothes, no money, no plate, Mr. Wendell. Asked his name. No one ever knew his name, cause he's a no one. Never thought twice about spending on an old bum until I had a chance to really get to know one. Now that I know him, to give him money isn't charity. He gives me some knowledge, I buy him some shoes. And to think blacks spend all their money on big colleges, still most of y'all come out confused. Go ahead, Mr. Wendell. Go ahead, Mr. Wendell. Mr. Wendell has freedom, a free that you and I think is dumb. Free to be without the worries of a quick to this society, for Mr. Wendell's a bum. His only worries are sickness and an occasional harassment by the police in their chase. Uncivilized, we call him, but I just saw him eat off the food we waste. Civilization, are we really civilized? Yes or no? Who are we to judge when thousands of innocent men could be brutally enslaved or killed over a racist grudge? Mr. Wendell has tried to warn us about our ways, but we don't hear him talk. Is it his fault when we've gone too far? And we got too far, cause on him we've walked. Mr. Wendell, a man, a human in flesh, but not by law. I bid you dignity to stand with pride. Realize that all in all, you stand tall. Go ahead, Mr. Wendell.
Listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this segment is Melissa Hall. So, Melissa, how have you changed? How have you changed in ways that you would not have anticipated or chosen without a push from life? You know, this is trying to get at, you know, what have you needed to respond to that you didn't really plan for, but you had to respond to?
Yeah. It's interesting because some of these questions seem to be answering the same thing, but
there are different ways of getting at similar things. There's similar skill sets, yeah.
I think everyone matures at a certain sense, mm-hmm. you know, through life, and you know, sometimes when you're not ready for certain things, you don't properly, you know, address those things. Parts of my life, such as getting married, you know, graduating high school, graduating college, getting married, having kids, then moving back to Ithaca.
Mm-hmm. How old are your kids?
My kids are 6 and 9.
Okay.
Two girls.
Yeah.
You know, all of those, everything, you're changed by every part of your life as time goes on, and, you know, definitely by having kids. And moving away from Ithaca for
right.
a large portion of my time.
Right. So what surprised you in that move, or what surprised you about having children that you didn't, that you didn't really anticipate?
How hard it is. Mm-hmm. How hard it is to give up being near your family, and missing them,
right.
My parents, and how much more responsibility having kids is. And it's probably the biggest responsibility that anyone can take on, full time, 24/7.
Right.
But wonderful at the same time. It could be really difficult for relationships, family and mm-hmm. otherwise, to maintain, when you're getting older. Sometimes I think it has to do with society, mm-hmm. And the proper, supports that are in place for people when they're having kids, when they're working.
Right. So you started your family in Philadelphia?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess one of the things that one of the things I've been learning about is the difference between fear and panic, and fear is the response to a physical stress, but panic is the response to the loss of key relationships. And when we move away to where we have no friends, or sometimes when people go to college and they lose their entire social network, they have to rebuild one. That becomes a time where you really are vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Like you were saying, when you moved to Philadelphia and didn't have the family's
friends
in place, how did you reconstruct or how did you build a network of relationships in Philadelphia? What did you learn about yourself in doing that?
I mean, living in Philadelphia is a lot different. Not a lot, but the housing is a lot more condensed.
Right, it's all very much more dense. It's urban.
I mean, you basically have houses, you know, 360 degrees around you. So it's like boom, 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 boom. Like, mm-hmm. you know, and tons of neighbors that you have access to and you're friendly with. I mean, sometimes you're more connected, sometimes you're more disconnected. It's really strange. I was connected with my in-laws and close with them when we were there. And
your in-laws are in Philadelphia?
In Philadelphia.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the relationships that were built, you know, relationships change a lot after college.
Sure.
You stay in connection with them, with people that you were friends with, maybe lose some connection.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, once you graduate and you get married and you have kids, it becomes more so the relationships that you develop at work,
mm-hmm.
And other relationships with other parents,
right.
That are going to school with your kids. That can be difficult, and sometimes shared experiences, connecting with people completely that see you, understand you, get you, can be difficult sometimes for many.
Right.
And when I was living in Philadelphia, my husband at the time, we're divorced now, worked at a music venue, mm-hmm. and that was a wonderful experience of getting to know a lot of different music and a lot of different people, very social
mm-hmm.
oriented place where I felt fortunate to be a part of when we were there.
Neat. So what did you, did you develop a way of kind of being able to assess whether this is a friendship that's going to last, or this is kind of because we have kids or because we're in the workplace?
Yeah, there's definitely certain people I connected more with than others. I've always had kind of, you know, I've always had a problem connecting completely with people, and you kind of have to accept, you know, what you have in common.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I always want, you know, I always like having friends where they can come over to my house and have tea, or
right.
I can go over there. So sometimes those relationships might be a little bit more difficult to find, but, the relationships, like just kind of when you bump into people and stuff like that, can be well, good as well.
Right.
But,
yeah. And it sounds like you had modeled for you a father who really valued relating to people kind of a lot. And that's kind of, I wonder if that's part of the baseline.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've always kind of wondered why people aren't as open as they are.
Yeah.
And
aren't more open than they are. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, more like there's so much hesitation.
Right.
About, you know, properly, about engaging with somebody,
sure.
and connecting with them and whatnot. So I think, you know, I think with time and generations, I think a lot has changed. Maybe that has to do with it.
But
depending,
right? People are circumspect, and because this Tompkins County basically doubled in size in the past 60, 65 years, and that's a time where Americans have been more private, more circumspect, less willing to kind of, with the exception of some of the hippie movements at kind of community, but people oftentimes haven't done community very well. Mm-hmm. So we've grown and we've grown with a lot of people who are very intellectual and very professional oriented, and yet they want a community, but we're not necessarily good at it. And yeah. that describes in some sense your district, the fifth ward. How do you see that kind of, how do you see your?
It's interesting because, you know, I have staple friends.
Sure.
in Fall Creek.
Like long time friends.
And yeah. I have one yeah. friend, Ashley, in Fall Creek that I went to elementary school with. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's different. You don't really see that often. And she was saying, well, I only know my two neighbors.
Right. Yeah.
And I was like, well, why don't you do some door knocking with me and we can meet all of them. Uh-huh. Just to kind of get her involved. And I think that that's been the greatest thing for me through this is meeting people that I wouldn't have normally met. I think, yeah, I mean, there's some really, really interesting people that live in my neighborhood.
Right.
Many interesting people that took interest too in what I'm doing. But, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what have you discovered about their interest or about your neighborhood as you have canvassed?
It's interesting who is interested in me. As far as a candidate, I think some people are working poor, you know, people that are in our community in Fall Creek trying to make it and stay, just like myself. Mm-hmm. Single people households that are supporting their kids. There's people that are interested in, you know, social justice type stuff that I'm interested in, that I've connected with. There's, you know, just other parents that I connected with in the school. And I mean, that's pretty much in general what it is. And, for whatever other reason, you know, people that just found me to be friendly and interesting, mm-hmm. I guess.
But also I think, when you're canvassing neighborhoods, you're going to, you know, people are making snap judgments, you know?
Yeah, they're under. It's who you connect with,
right? Right.
And who's, you know, people who are open to connecting mm-hmm. with you, or they make a choice,
right,
as to who they, you know, connect with more.
I want to let's switch to the next question here. Tell me about a time when your better judgment proved wrong and it hurt others. Now, and all of these questions, what holds them all together? Is these three middle sets of questions is about change. How do you deal with change, and how do you process with change, your own change, and how do you engage others in things that maybe haven't changed for the better for them, but you instigated it. How did you respond to them, and how would you describe their response to you?
I'm going to talk about something that's pretty, heavy.
Sure.
So in a combination of two things, I've been in a transition probably for the past 3 to 5 years of separating with my children's father, mm-hmm. Which has been a really difficult thing. And also while this was going on, I moved up here to be close to my father, who also had a health ailment for probably the same amount of time. And just passed away in February. Uh-huh. So, you know, looking back on both, you know, two things. One, the person that you choose to, you know, spend your life with, to have kids with and raise a family with, mm-hmm. you really beat yourself up in that process, as to what you could have done better.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if that's what the question is getting at, but that's like a huge thing as to my relationships and understanding where my heart lies, mm-hmm. and like where I am and how I feel about things and being true to myself. And then, you know, to connect also with my dad, you know, mm-hmm. just the relationship of, I mean, I think I did a lot of good things at the end,
right.
but I wish that we were closer through through everything.
Right, right. And these are two major losses, and maybe it would be, I mean, I can see how you want to, it's important to address them both, but let's take them separately.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, how, one of the things is trying to figure out with a marriage that began with hope, when were you aware that it wasn't working, or what did you miss? I mean, those are the kinds of things that people tend to ask themselves, or how could I have done it better, or how could I have seen it coming? You know, the things that are kind of reflecting on what happened. Has that been part of your you remember you were referring to it, but I'm
Yeah. I think, yeah, I mean, early on, there's always, everyone has glimpses of when they're making decisions, sure, as to, you know, and everyone has a different philosophy on how they make decisions.
Right.
So, you know, I kind of threw myself into getting married when I was 25.
Right.
And
on balance, you felt this was a good thing, and you were going to be all
in. I was in it right then and there, but you know, I had just graduated college, and I had, you know, kind of been teeter tottering back and forth between college and finally did. And I just thought it was the next big step. You know, I mm-hmm. didn't want to lose him if I said, you know, if we made a choice to separate, I felt like we weren't going to continue, and that was really sad to me.
Right, and you didn't want to bear the sadness.
I didn't want to bear the sadness, and there was a lot of good things with us, mm-hmm. but I don't think I had the worldly perspective that I needed in order to make that big of a decision at 25. And you know, there's many feelings of what I would have done instead. You know, like mm-hmm. traveling and go get my master's,
right.
And you know, just having more freedom in general to kind of find my way.
Mm-hmm. And how have you walked the father of your children through that decision, your ex-husband? How have you walked your children through that decision to help them to understand, but also to move forward with you?
I mean, I will say right now that it's a very contentious mm-hmm. Relationship, and you know, I went into it hoping that it wouldn't get that way, and
right.
being positive that if we're separating, we'll be okay and we'll be able to maybe be friends. sometimes it's really hard to do that, I found, afterwards, and especially when you're finalizing custody arrangements and you're finalizing, you know, who's going to live with who, when, and where right. you're going to live, and your own insecurities as to how are you going to support yourself and your two kids, even if it is on halftime or close to halftime.
Right. How can you pull your weight in a situation you didn't expect to be in?
I didn't want to be in.
Right.
I, for about, you know, we separated 5 years ago in Philly for a few months, and then we moved here, tried to make it work here. And I had some requests, and then it happened. So it ended up us just not, you know, making the decision to then, you know, end it, basically.
Right.
My kids were, I mean, how old are they now? They're 3 and 6 then. So, I mean, it's very, you know, in a sense, it's very painful.
Yeah.
And I've been doing everything that I can to move forward. My dad was a huge
support
yeah. in helping me with that, and I don't want to get too mushy there.
Right.
But he was just this person who had my corner and believed in me mm-hmm. and my potential, and just thinking that everything will be okay. You have it. Right. You have the strength that you need. And it just took way longer than he wanted to see. He saw me go through this for the whole duration of his sickness.
Right.
And right. actually spoke about it, you know, his last few days. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much.
So when you, I want to focus on your dad a little bit now. He had you when he, I mean, you were born when he was 49. And was this his first marriage, or was this
it was his first marriage.
Yeah.
So we had that kind of commonality, I think, in a sense.
And also, you know, somebody who is nearly 50 when they are in a relationship coming together and having children, that's a long time. That's late. And there's a wisdom to that, I think, almost. I wish I'd had kids younger, because there's a sense in which you're kind of dumb and you're all working it out together. And as long as you have people around you, or you're much older, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, because you have some of the wisdom, or maybe. But when you were talking about, you weren't particularly close beforehand to your father.
Yeah, I mean, it was hard being raised.
By somebody the age of your grandfather.
By somebody, and a lot of my friends would, you know, make comments, and I'd feel like a little like, I don't understand what. And not only that, it was, you know, my dad was a farmer and he was a laborer. And I'm not saying that, like, I felt ashamed, but, you know, he would pull up at school with a full bale of, like, a truck full of hay and tools falling out of his car when I would open it up, and I'd be like with his hat sideways. And I'm just like, Dad, come on.
Right.
And so he would get upset with me if I felt embarrassed because I was going through those teenage years.
Right.
And I mean, we grew out of that, and
that is to be expected, because there's nobody more embarrassing, regardless of age or occupation, than your parent in those years.
Yeah, I mean, before that, I was like his tag along. Like I used to go to the farm with him because he had a farm at my grandmother's house. He took care of my grandmother after his dad passed away, way before me and my sister were born. And he's very dedicated to his grandmother. And
He was what we might call a weekend farmer.
He was a weekend farmer.
Yeah.
A part-time farmer.
Yeah.
I mean, he worked full-time and then he did this farming thing. And the strength and the energy that it took to do that at that point, he was in his 50s.
And into his 60s.
And he was taking care of, you know, my mom was taking care of us too. But I mean, he was, you know, hauling us back and forth and doing things with us as well and activities.
He was being an engaged parent.
But there was no other thing. They had no social anything besides maybe going into church.
Right.
It was, you know, family, farming, work. That's it.
Right. Wow.
But.
Yeah. So when you came back, that's when he became sick. That's also when you became more explicit about connecting with him.
Yeah. So my dad had a hereditary lung condition, or respiratory condition, that his dad also had and died from. And also my dad worked at shops, like, you know, warehouses, like labor places, and also farming, where the air quality wasn't the best.
Right.
So that affected him respiratorily. He didn't smoke. But he had the lungs and the predisposition to not make for a very good, when you're getting older, and it affected his heart. So, he had been on the process of deteriorating, and he died when he was 84, he still made it to a long.
He still made it to 84, which is a good long
more than most, right?
Right.
I mean, I knew that he was getting worse, and especially when I would come to visit, the hugs just got tighter when he was saying goodbye to me, and I'd feel really upset when I would have to go back to Philly with my kids, especially as my marriage was kind of not doing as well as I would have liked it to be. And I kind of needed their support more than ever. Did I answer your question?
Well, yeah. And did your dad recognize your reaching out to him as more of an adult peer and less as a...
I put the housing rental prices aside, and I came back here and I said, this is where I need to be. I actually talked about some of the people that were close to me in Philly about this, to make this decision.
Sure.
And to my parents, and moved here. When I first came back, I had a very nice garden. I like made a garden for my family, my parents. They hadn't been using the garden space that my grandmother had as her perennial garden for a really long time. And I just went all out and, you know, had a really nice garden for the first 2 years. After that, I kind of fell aside because it's really hard to maintain when it's not my house. But yeah, I felt that was like my connection with my dad, to of reaching out. And my dad, you know, liked that. And it was a reason to come there and spend time with them, too. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And hands in the soil. And yeah. Was it vegetables or fruits or both? Or, I mean, or flowers?
It was mostly vegetables and fruits, like cosmos, sunflowers.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, zinnias.
Cool. So, is there a piece of music you'd like to play in conjunction with this particular segment?
You can play Flightless Bird.
Okay.
Yeah.
Flightless Bird, American Mouth, and the author is
Iron and Wine.
Yeah. Okay, here we go.
Okay.
I was a quick, wet boy, diving too deep for coins, all of your street light eyes, wide on my plastic toys. Then when the cops closed the fair, I cut my long baby hair and stole.
Listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and our guest on this segment is Melissa Hall. So, Melissa, how do you take care of yourself? What do you do to restore yourself emotionally, intellectually, physically, throughout the day, daily, weekly, monthly? How do you know you need to do it? This is a question about self-care.
It depends on what I'm dealing with or how I feel.
Sure.
So I do things according to that. For a long time, I felt that like I wouldn't feel my equilibrium or like where I needed to be unless I ran and read on a regular basis. so that my mind was stimulated and my body felt like all the blood was going through it and sweating and just because I felt like more balanced when I was having exercise.
Sure,
just,
sure. It does help. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, going through things and, you know, life stress, I've done a lot of yoga, hoping to get back to that sometime soon. And I try to ride my bike to work every day and home if I can. And it, really connecting with people socially is important to me. Making sure that I make time for friends and my kids, having family time with my kids so that we're connecting on a regular basis. The campaign's kind of thrown things off a little bit.
Right, right.
Because it's so busy, you know, preparing and doing things.
And they're old enough to either be proud or resentful or both.
Yeah, they go back and forth, and my oldest daughter is like, I really hope you win. And it was just so cute because, you know, just like, you know, it's exciting for them that I'm running. And yeah, they better be, right? But, yeah.
No, but it's just, I mean, that unselfconscious show of support.
Yeah. And I feel like there's been a period of time where I haven't been reading as much as I would like about politics and what's going on locally with whether it be housing or whether it be other certain things going on with government. And this has given me the opportunity to be more engaged and actually have the knowledge to know what's going on. And so many people, even just canvassing, don't know who their Common Council representative is or representatives and or what Common Council is.
Right.
So, you know, you know, there's a spectrum, obviously, in what to know. But to me, it's always been something that I've wanted to do is to be engaged in policy or something of that nature. It's interesting.
So, and I'm gonna take that since you brought it up in this question. So part of your taking care of yourself is making sure that you can think about kind of big issues and find a way to act on them through policy.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I've reached out to my old program where I used to work and try to ask them if they would be willing to take a stance on homelessness or the housing crisis here. Because when I moved here, I felt the housing program was so underfunded, and I would see the results of that on a regular basis. I mean, it was three programs in one. It's a drop-in center for people that are street homeless. It's a homeless shelter and it's a transitional housing. And I really felt strongly that those housing programs should have been separated into three programs because it caused other people to go into relapse. Caused, you know, it made things a lot more difficult to people that were coming in to give services. Some people wouldn't want to come in to get services, whether it be a pantry bag or whether it be getting housing counseling when they needed intervention.
Because they were afraid they'd be pulled back into...
There's a lot of people that were actively using that were coming in. Sure. And so, you know, and they were in recovery or they had their kids with them or whatever the reason was. So, yeah, I felt immediately that was something that someone that worked in that sector needed to take stance and address and say, hey. And then, you know, I guess that's part of me feeling like feeling like I have a purpose is a huge thing of my health.
Right.
And try to, you know, let people know what's going on or, and properly addressing that matter and make sure that there's a solution comes about. I'm talking a lot about, you know, homelessness, but, you know, this housing problem affects the very, very poor to the people that are doing the best they can to work and support their families like myself, like moderate income.
I mean, we used to say in the housing issue, you could build housing at any income level in this economy and it would relieve pressure on everybody underneath because we have shortages at all income levels. But, you know, it's just that it's really hard for the poor and the working class folks.
Yes, yeah. And the people that are in Ithaca around the year.
Right, right. So you were talking about yoga, time with your friends and time with your kids, and also just the hard physical workout. when do you sense that you need to kind of to take care of yourself? What kind of begins, what do you notice about yourself or the situation so you realize you need to step back and do something or change your approach?
Sometimes I need to get out any kind of, you know, like sometimes I just need to run off any, like sometimes people get angry or you have these emotions and you don't know what's happening or what's going on with them. So it's nice to have an outlet where you're able to just like put that in that place, whether it be running for, you know, a set amount of time every week or just going to the gym or swimming. And usually I can feel it if I'm getting like certain like aches and pains.
Right.
Like I feel like if I'm sitting too long, I have an office, so I sit a lot at work, and it's to me beneficial for me to be active. So that I'm, and I like being outside too.
Right. So you just you notice that you get a little stiff or fussy.
Yeah.
How do your children, I mean, one of the things with my kids is I could tell my mood by how my kids were reacting to me at various points, just because, you know, if I wasn't kind of self-monitoring well, is that, do they kind of let you know where they think you're coming from?
I mean, sometimes they can tell and sometimes I hold it in well. I mean, it's important for them to be outside more than they realize, and they may not take the initiative to say, oh, let's go for a walk or let's go ride our bike, because there's always one of my kids that wants to be like, I just want to stay inside all day. But I mean, it's so important, so we can do it together too. Sure. But sometimes we do, but yeah, they definitely let me know if I'm in a mood.
That's mom again, as it were.
Yeah.
So Melissa, it's been wonderful getting to know you. What music should we close with today?
We can do the local, some Redmond band, Life is Water.
Okay.
What I think about when I'm in Ithaca or when I've been away and I come back.
Okay, here we go.
Side by side.